everybody. Welcome to the Hallmarkies podcast. I'm so excited today. We have a return guest here that we have interviewed. We interviewed last year. It's the only editor we have ever interviewed. It's the very great friend of the podcast, Randy Carter, is here. And Randy, thanks so much for coming back.
Oh, no problem. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. So how have you been? I've talked to you for a year.
I've been good. I've been super busy, as always. Working on a lot of films, which is what I do. Yeah. I've done, I've probably done over half a dozen films since the last time I spoke to you.
Oh my gosh.
So it's a lot.
That's amazing. Yeah. But you still love what you do.
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. What's your favorite thing about being an editor?
There's a couple of things which are sort of like, they're kind of like in the same wheelhouse, but there's two aspects of it that I love. One is I love the storytelling aspect of being an editor, is getting to sort of like put the pieces together and help tell the sort of most entertaining and clear story that you can. And so that's part of it. And combined with that is I love the idea of like being the person that sort of takes all the different elements and is able to combine them to sort of like, you know, put it all together and see it from beginning to end and just put all the pieces together. It's like a big jigsaw puzzle that you're putting together, but it's a jigsaw puzzle that if you move a piece, you know, the pieces don't necessarily have to go where you think they go. They can go someplace else and you get a slightly different picture. Mm-hmm. And that's a wonderful process.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever sort of feel like, oh, I wish they had taken the first draft that you put together, or I forget how you phrased it, but your first edit that you put together.
Yeah,
why did they pick that other shot? My pick was better.
Well, sometimes, generally not. I mean, a lot of times, especially when you're dealing with films for television, there's a very specific running time that you have to meet.
Right.
So things either have to stay in that you would like to come out, or things have to come out just because, you know, it might be perfect, but it's perfect and it's 2 minutes too long. Mm-hmm. And so there's no choice but 2 minutes have to come out. Mm-hmm. And so part of my job is, in conjunction with the director and the producers and the network, is figuring out, you know, what 2 minutes can we lose that aren't going to affect the story? I mean, what's the part that can come out that's going to affect the story the least. Mm-hmm. Rarely do they make, I mean, every once in a while there'll be a decision that I'm like, I don't think that's the right way to go. But, you know, those are decisions that are made above me. And I'm the one making those changes. Mm-hmm. I mean, they tell me to make them, but I'm actually the one. It's not like I see it after the fact and I go, whoa, what happened there?
Oh, okay.
I'm the one that makes those changes. So if they want a different take, or if they want to cut something or put something in a different place, I mean, I'm the one who does it based on their direction. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I'm ever surprised when I see it on the air and go like, whoa, what just happened there?
Yeah. Interesting.
So
what's your fastest turnaround that you've ever done on one of these TV movies?
Without question, I think I mentioned this last time, Christmas Land, which we did, I can't remember what year that was, but we shot that thing in late October, early November. I think we wrapped like sometime in the first week of November, and it aired December 12th, which was insane. I mean, we had to do a lot of things that we don't ordinarily do. The director was approving scenes while we were still shooting. The composer was recording final music for the scenes. The network was signing off on scenes without seeing the full context of the film because there was just no time. There was a very specific reason that there was a company, and I don't know the details, but there was a company that was supposed to do that movie, and something happened. To this day, I'm still not sure what happened, but at the last minute, like, they couldn't do it. And so the network contacted us and said, can you know, we have this hole in our schedule. Now we have this film. Can you mount this production and get it by, you know, the delivery date? And we foolishly said yes, and we did it. But it was pretty, that was a pretty tough road to hoe.
Yeah. I interviewed Nikki DeLoach, and that was, I think her, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was her first Hallmark movie. It could be good, I think. And yeah,
could have been.
It was an intense experience, but she said it was great. So I need to watch that again.
Well, the thing is, I mean, not to take away from any of them, but their experience was exactly the same as it ordinarily would have been.
Right.
Because they shot for an X number of days, just like they would have if they had shot it in August, as opposed to October.
That's true.
It's only in the post. So it's like the composer and myself and all the, like, the post sound mixers and the color correction people and all the delivery people, everybody involved in post-production, not just me, but everybody had to, like, really amp up their schedules and, like, make it happen fast, fast, fast.
Yeah.
So
I think she got the script, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to listen to that podcast again, but got it pretty quickly. And then,
oh, that could be that again, part because of that last minute.
The busyness. Yeah. But yeah, it's, that's really, really interesting. And I feel like it's even, I wouldn't be surprised if some on this slate, because there's so many, are even later than that in finishing filming. It wouldn't surprise me at all, because,
well, you know, it's
so many.
There are so many, but because of that, what happens is there are more production companies involved. And also, like, for example, we are shooting, like, I think 3 back to back in Utah, which we don't ordinarily do them sort of back to back to back to back, but we have no choice because there's so many this year.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
And of course we do them not just for Hallmark, but we also do them for Lifetime and other channels. So our production slate is pretty full.
There's one on Lifetime that they haven't announced yet. And I don't know if they're just going to not do 28 and they're just going to do 27, or if they just haven't announced it yet. And then on Hallmark, there's one that we only know the title. That's it. We don't have casting. We don't have, it's Alice in Christmasland. We don't know anything about it at all. Director, actors. I mean, that's not saying they haven't completely cast it, but we just don't know.
Oh, it's entirely possible that they haven't cast it yet or even chosen a director yet. I mean, it's September now. Yeah. They could easily be shooting this in October again.
Right.
Also nowadays, I mean, The Christmas season, I mean, I have a Christmas movie that we did. It's actually a really, really good one for Lifetime. It's airing October 25th.
Right. Oh, so you're the first one, huh? Yeah.
They're airing, like, before Halloween now. So, you know, if some is going to shoot in, you know, like, late October sometime, either early October, late October, that is hopefully one that airs closer to actual Christmas, you know, to give them some kind of time. Whereas if we shot one back in June and we were like, oh, good, you know, June is when you normally would shoot your Christmas movies, but it's airing in October.
Right.
So that's pretty crazy.
That is. It's wild. I mean, we are very feeling very overwhelmed just because we're starting to do the preview shows in October for the different channels. And it's just, there's so many Christmas movies.
I don't know how you guys do it. I don't know how you guys watch
I plan on watching that by the end of this season. I will have seen at least 100 Christmas movies.
Well, but also you guys don't only just do the Christmas movies. You do all Hallmark movies,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we do.
If you count, you know, the Winter Wonderland, yeah, whatever they call it, their Winterfest, and then their Hallmark, right, Harvest and their summer, you count all that stuff together. There's like, what, isn't there like 90-some movies that Hallmark, yeah, just Hallmark does?
Yeah, just from Hallmark, there's going to be close to 100 for the year.
Oh, my God.
And and so it's wild. It's wild and crazy. And, yeah, so
and,
far.
And you guys don't just watch them. You have to sort of analyze them and like review them and talk about
yeah,
them. And
yeah,
that, you know, I mean, a lot of work.
At
I
least,
don't envy you.
At least we're not like some of the other podcasts that do an entire episode just on one movie. Like we combine them in, you know, because I just don't feel like there's sure, enough meat on the bones for most of these movies to have a whole 45-minute episode about them, you know, unless they're a Hall of Fame or we're combining it with an interview or some other way, because it's just, I don't know, how much can you really talk about one of these movies? But yeah, so far this year, I have seen, as of recording, this is the 22nd of September, I have seen 659 Hallmark movies.
Mm. 59. Wow. So. But you know, there's, it's so funny. You would think that like so many Christmas movies, and that's just the Hallmark Christmas movies. And
yeah,
of course, Lifetime is amping up their Christmas movies. And like, you know, people are going to get sick of these, right? There's no evidence at all
no,
that people are getting sick of these. There's no evidence at all that these are, that they're starting to, you know, lose their luster or whatever. The ratings are still great. It's still Hallmark's, you know, biggest time of the year, doing their Christmas movies. That's their best ratings. I mean, people love these things. So
yeah,
what can you do?
True. Yeah. We're really excited about it. And, there's something about being a completionist that's very satisfying to me, not only just to say I did it, but also just to see it in totality, you know, and to see how they all approach it just slightly different and why some of them work and some of them don't, despite the fact that they're essentially the same ingredients. Like
that's the thing, isn't it? Because I work on, you know, whatever. I just said, oh, I've worked on like, you know, three or four Christmas movies this year. And you're like, pshaw, that's nothing. I've watched 80 of them. And my point is like, when I'm working on them, I often feel like, you know, oh, all the ingredients are the same. The stories are kind of very similar.
Yeah.
You know, they repeat a lot of the same actors, but they do it for a reason. People love these actors and you know, the feedback seems to be that the audience likes that they're kind of predictable and they kind of know where they're going. I mean, they don't want anything. I mean, Hallmark is very aware of what its brand is and tries to deliver. So its audience is happy. But so if you're watching, you know, 80 of these or however many, you know, 40 Hallmark Christmas movies, they all got to blend together. I mean, like next year, if I threw a title at you, would you even remember what it was about?
I have a weird memory for that kind of thing.
So really?
I might, but not everything, not everything. They do kind of blend together.
And the titles are often so similar.
Especially some of the ones that made no impression on me, either being super bad or super great. Like the middling ones are the ones I'm more likely to kind of forget. But
sure.
but the lukewarm ones.
Well, it was nice for me earlier this year. I got to do a Hallmark movie that wasn't a Christmas movie.
Yes.
I did one of their summer movies. I did Sister of the Bride.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was nice.
We liked Sister of the Bride. I actually got to interview the writer of that one.
Anna. Sure.
Yeah. Anna. And, I really liked her and I really liked, I don't know, I just liked the fact that the movie, there were a couple from the very beginning. And so it wasn't like...
Here's the thing. Do you want a little secret about why they were a couple right from the beginning, very unlike the normal thing?
It was nice to not have to wait till the last 30 seconds for them to get together. Like, they were a couple from the beginning, and they're seeing their dynamic as they tried to wrestle with, like, a pretty easy to relate to issue of, you know, what career are they going to put first in the relationship and How is that going to work? And I thought that was really good. But what's your, give us the scoop.
The original script was a sequel to a previous movie where at the end of the movie, they had gotten engaged. Uh-huh. And so they were going to start this movie as engaged, and it was going to be about a follow-up. And then they're trying to get their wedding scheduled. And pretty much the plot was more or less the same as it is now, but it was a sequel. You were following characters that had met and fallen in love and gotten engaged in the first movie. And then somewhere in the development process, they decided they didn't want to make it a sequel anymore, but they still liked the story. So it got changed, but it maintained. Like, it's very unusual because there's no sort of meet cute because they're already engaged.
Yep.
So that was kind of a unique challenge. I think the cast was really good in that movie. Mm. I did two movies with Ryan Rotman. I did Sister the Bride, and I did a cut on what was it called? Christmas Wonderland.
Yeah, Christmas Wonderland.
With him, mm-hmm. And he's great. I like him a lot. Mm-hmm. And then Michael Gross, who played the dad. I love Michael Gross. I cut him in a movie years ago, and I got to meet him. He is such a genuinely nice man. He is so just giving and just wonderful, so it was so much fun. They shot that in Palm Springs. I did not go out to location, so I didn't get to meet any of these people, but that was a fun one.
Yeah, he's like America's dad. I mean, really.
He really is.
and that's why his character was kind of a lot. He was a lot, but because he's similar to Tom Hanks, you know, like you put Tom Hanks in a role and maybe it's a little bit of a lot role, you know, a little bit challenging to like this person, but because it's Tom Hanks and he's inherently likable, you like the character, you're rooting for the character. I think it's kind of the same.
There was a lot of, in editorial, there was a lot of like walking the thin line between is he too angry or is he, you know, just being a protective father? And that's where you start choosing which takes do you use, because some takes were angrier than others. Hallmark decided they really wanted to sort of shy away from being, because there were some takes that were much angrier that he went with, and they didn't want to use those. Mm-hmm. And so they wanted to be just more like the protective father and not be. And so a lot of like the sort of dad humor, mm-hmm. which was there, and a lot of that was Michael improvising. They wanted to definitely keep all of that, because then that just makes him, oh, that's dad, you know, he's just being dad. So everybody sort of like, you know, would still like him, because there was and again, like you said, casting Michael Gross, everybody loves that guy.
Sure.
So like you said, it's just like casting Tom Hanks. How can you not like him?
Right.
You know, it's hard to play for him to play a bad guy. So,
Yeah. So was the 4th of July aspect of it, was that added in kind of late, or was that a plan from the beginning?
As far as I'm aware, it was always there. I mean, certainly from the script that they started shooting that I first saw, it was always 4th of July.
Interesting.
It does seem to be, it's sort of like, the same thing kind of happens sometimes on the Christmas movies, where you look at a movie and go, you know what, you could take Christmas out of that movie mm-hmm. and nothing changes.
Right.
You know, it's not really about, because I mean, how many movies can you be where Christmas is like at the core of what the story is about?
Right.
And so, yeah, Sister of the Bride didn't have to be 4th of July. There's, you know, the exact same story could have played out and not be 4th of July. But, mm-hmm. you know, they always try to, like, wrap these things around holidays if they can.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. That's really interesting. So I want to talk more about your ones from last year real quick. But I wanted – I know you're a big Good Witch fan. So I wanted to get your feeling about how did you feel about the last season. You know, we had to say goodbye to Grace and, you know, Bailey leaving and a lot of stuff happening. How did you feel about the season?
Well, I like the season. I'm really curious. I thought the season played out fine. I'm just uh-huh. really curious what they're going to do next season when Bailey's gone.
Yeah.
Because I also hear they're keeping Nick.
Right.
So even though he's also supposed to go away to college, they're obviously going to, like, you know, have him somehow stay in town, one can only imagine. I have to believe, this is my prediction, I have no inside information about this whatsoever, I think Cassie and Sam are going to adopt or maybe foster or in some way get like a young teenager in the house. Mm. I think they're either going to probably not adopt, they'll probably foster some like, you know, wayward, yeah, you know, orphan that shows up at Gray House one day. And it'll then probably, Cassie decides to take her in.
It'll probably be somehow tied to like, I swear they never tire of college friends of Cassie.
Right.
Like how many friends did this person, did she have? Like what's going on?
And every one of them is like her best friend. It's like, yeah, she was my best friend. Right. Really? You have 50 of them.
I mean, Cassie is a delight, so I don't doubt it, but still, wow. I think in the Halloween special, it's Cassie's college roommate is coming. I swear she's
so. I know.
But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it was something like that, or, you know, for sure, somebody will end up moving into the house one way or another.
There were a couple of episodes this season. I think the writers, they had new writers this season, I believe. And they got it towards the end. They finally got it down. But like there was the one episode where like the prince showed up.
Yeah.
And I was like, eh, I just, this is not a show that's like where there's guest stars of the week. Mm-hmm. Like it used to be that way. I mean, in the beginning, I don't know if you remember the first couple of seasons, yeah, of Good Witch, like every episode, like a new, you know, a guest star would show up and I'm going to stay at Gray House and here's my story and Cassie will help me solve my story. And then I move on. But then they've gotten away from that because it's more about our regular characters there in Middleton, which I think works better. At least I prefer that. Mm-hmm. So when there's somebody that shows up, that's only going to be there for an episode or two, stays in Gray House, has a problem, and then leaves, it's like, I'm not that interested because I don't get that invested in that character.
Yeah.
Whereas I have all these other characters. Like, I mean, for God's sake, they have George there. And what have they done with that guy in 5 years? Nothing. He, like, fixes the plumbing. He brings in the luggage. And that's really it.
Yeah, it's true.
And I'm like, why couldn't you do something with him? I would love, like, an older woman to show up and let him have a little romance or something.
Well, and we never even found out what happened to his wife. Like,
I'll tell you, I have a theory about that, too. Here's what I'm convinced. They never did talk about it, but I have a feeling that when they started season one and they said, okay, well, because we can't have Jake, we're going to have him killed off. Mm-hmm. And so that first episode was very much a lot about his memorial and his death, and it could have bordered, especially for Hallmark, could have bordered on the depressing. And they were like, well, what can we say about George's wife? We have too many characters, so we want to get rid of, well, if we mention that she also has passed away, that's too much death in one thing. So they just sort of like, pushed her under the rug and just, I presume she just has passed away in the meantime. He doesn't wear his wedding ring anymore. It hasn't since the series started. So it's not like she's just off visiting somewhere or whatever. But at this point, 5 years down the road, they're not ever going to mention her. I mean, people often talk about it all the time. Like, oh, whatever happened to his wife, Gwen? And like, give it up. They're not going to mention her at this point. It's like that ship has sailed.
Well, and we know that Brandon and his wife are both going to be gone. They said that you know, at the graduation that they were leaving. But I think a good plot would be is if you brought back Lori, wouldn't even necessarily have to be the same actress because they've already used two different actresses as Lori. So you could just bring in a different Lori and
Lori's always been the same actress.
No, I think I thought there was two.
No, two for Tara, for Brandon's. There were two Taras.
Oh, maybe that's
which
what
was Brandon and two Brandons. That must be what you're thinking of.
But even if they had to bring in a new Lori, it would not be a problem. And then you could have her have a kid of some kind.
Right.
And she end up staying at, like, that would be a natural fit. And I think that would work.
I sort of miss Brandon and Tara. I liked their, remember when they were going to try to have a baby and all that? I liked that plot line. And they sort of just went nowhere. Again, every season they kind of bring in, every couple seasons, they bring in new writers. And I think they just sort of like try to refresh it or for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But I miss those guys. I hate that they got rid of Derek without even a mention. I liked him a lot.
Same.
I always wanted Derek and Eve to get together. Remember Eve was also gone.
And I miss the dynamic.
Receptionist or whatever.
I miss the dynamic of Derek and Martha together.
Sure.
That was fun.
And they don't even have, I'm going to forget his name now. I'm so good at this usually. Her assistant, who was so great.
Oh, Jared. Jared.
Jared. Turncoat. Right. He was so fun.
He was really fun.
And he's, I know, and he's not around. So thank God they still have Abigail, because she's probably one of my favorite characters.
She's,
I love her.
Really good. And I don't know, I liked the season as a whole. Like, I think it had a lot of fun moments, but it was a little bit frustrating at times, because like you were saying, I feel like they would kind of offer out the carrot of this like enticing plot, and then they would wrap it up in one episode or two episodes, and which was a little bit frustrating, because I felt like, for instance, I felt like there was way more they could have done with almost every stage of Martha. There's way more they could have done, but especially Martha as this talk show host, they could have way longer. I was so disappointed. But like, even just Martha 2.0, where she's figuring out this new thing, they could have milked that for way more and really had the character be in this vulnerable place. And I was disappointed that and it was interesting for Abigail too, because she's,
I totally agree. I think they need to make it, if I was in charge of the world, it would be much more like a soap opera, where like there would be whole season long arcs. They don't sort of do that. They wrap things up maybe in two episodes, but generally one. And Towards the end, you know, there was that whole thing with the treasure map, and they were searching for it, and that actually went over like two or three episodes. And I was like, that's the kind of thing that needs to play out over a whole season. And yeah, you can have like, they have like three or four plots per episode. You can bring in like one little C or D plot for a single episode, but have like an overarching plot for the whole season.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what where they're headed. It would be nice.
Cause there were a lot like that. Like the whole thing with Donovan's mom, that just went nowhere. I thought that she was going to be like such a dishy, fun, like, you know, villain kind of character. And she just was kind of, Luke, Grace's boyfriend, was just kind of flat. They didn't really do it, you know, anything. And I don't know, I feel like sometimes on Hallmark, sometimes I feel like when you're talking the television shows, they're afraid to let their characters be flawed and to breathe and to make mistakes. And that's fine for a 2-hour movie where everything gets wrapped up in a sweet bow. But for a television show, you want to see the characters grow and develop and learn and become better people. Otherwise,
I will say the one example of that is Abigail, who started out as sort of like this mean spirited to some degree. Yeah. You know, she was always sort of, but she always had the right intentions, but she would always do like the exact opposite way of that Cassie would do it. Cassie guides people to make their own correct decisions. Abigail will just like force a decision that she thinks is the correct one, which was an interesting dichotomy. And then, you know, even though I still love Abigail, she's definitely grown and now doesn't have that sort of, you know, that sort of not mean spirited, but you know, that sort of more bite to her as a character. I think you're right. I mean, Hallmark just doesn't want to play that. Like, cause even like, I loved when Luke was that's the boyfriend who had the mysterious phone call, and you realized he had some ulterior motive. And I was like, oh, cool. That's fun. Let's see where that goes.
Yeah, this is going to be dishy. And then, it's going to be fun. I was so excited.
I know. And it just sort of didn't really go. I mean, it finally got revealed what it was, but it all got wrapped up too easily. Mm-hmm. And if they had started that scene where he does that phone call, that should have been like episode 2 of the season. I mean, it doesn't help that they have so few episodes. They only have 10. I mean, I get it. I get the production, you know, realities, and they're not going to have 20 episodes a season or whatever, but it would be nice to have like, you know, get the writers, whoever, whether they're new writers or the same writers. Yeah. I don't know. Do you know if they're having the same writers next year? I haven't heard.
I don't know if it's the same showrunners as last year. I'm assuming so, but I don't know that.
Yeah, it was the same showrunners. Yeah, it probably is. But that showrunner, sit down with his writers and map out a whole arc for the whole season.
Yeah.
Because it's not like, I mean, Good Witch is the ratings of Good Witch are so steady.
Yeah.
They're actually very good. It's one of their highest rated shows, but it's also extremely steady. And what that means is everybody's tuning in every week. So don't be afraid to do much more serialized storytelling. Yes. It's not like people are just sort of tuning in randomly, right? I mean, the ratings show you that everyone's tuning in every week. So they can follow the storyline, I would think. So anyway,
I completely agree. I think that even with Abigail, like, ending on her physically not being able to say I love you was kind of that wasn't my favorite. And because that's never the way the magic has been on Good Witch. It has never been the way
to
physically stop someone from speaking. Like, that was a little weird to me.
Well, what do you think it was? I mean, the thing is, I like the concept of, was it really her just blaming the curse, or was it that she emotionally sort of wasn't quite ready to say it, even though she said she did, but she couldn't say the words. I mean, there was a complex emotion that could have been played there.
Even she had written it out on the flower petals and the thing, and it got like, that was a lot, but it was fine season. I enjoyed it, but I thought it could have been a great season if they had been a little more brave with their characters.
I agree. The thing about the magic is, like, it's always been from the very first Good Witch movie, which is where I first discovered it. I saw the very first movie, whatever it was, 10 years ago. It's always been like, is she or isn't she a witch? Because everything has a rational explanation, or it could be magic. You know, and as the series has gone, they sort of explain that it's just that she has this, like, intuition. She realizes somebody's walking into a room, but it's not magic like you know, Bewitched. She doesn't twitch her nose and things disappear.
Yeah.
It's more like she's, you know, always, she sort of has an intuition about what people need and what the best way is to help them. But there used to always be that sort of, but whenever they try to get it, like, the magic is real, I think they turn a corner they shouldn't turn.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the magic needs to still be a mystery. Like, you know, is it the Merowick, you know, these women have these powers, or is it just that they're, you know, good people and she just has this intuition, you know, that's her gift and it's not magic, you know, quote unquote.
Yeah, there was a weird episode also of the season where Grace was winding back time or something. Was she doing that calendar? You know, the one where she was making all the muffins?
I do. I'm so glad you brought that, because, you know, I listen to you guys' podcast when you do the Good Witch podcast every week.
Yeah.
Every week I listen. And I so want to, like, call in sometimes because I'm like, no, you guys are wrong. I love that episode.
I was confused by it. What time was travel the magic?
Everybody was confused. Well, the idea was she stopped time so that because she thought, oh, I won't grieve. So she can, like, she, like, turned back time, like, before she was grieving. But then, you know, she realized that you have to grieve. You have to let the time move forward because that's the only way to get past it.
But I mean, that's sort of the lesson. But everybody else was going at the regular time.
Yeah. I mean, she just personally stopped her emotional time. It's a little bit of a metaphor, but I loved it.
I didn't hate it, but it was just a little bit like, what's happening here?
You guys were sort of poo-pooing the whole episode. Nobody on your podcast thought it was that great. At least the time travel part. Everybody was sort of like, yeah, I didn't really get it. And I'm like, I'm walking in the evenings. I listen to the podcast as I walk around my neighborhood, and I'm like, I'm sure my neighbors are looking at me because I'm screaming like, no, you guys, no.
That's funny.
But it's a great, your podcast is great. I love to listen to your Good Witch podcast.
Well, we like to hear that. We want to be inspiring conversation. And we do have a phone number if you ever want to call in. We have a voicemail.
I might have to. Well, sometimes I comment on your Facebook page. Yeah, but I like usually that. By the time I think about that, it's like my emotional outrage has passed.
Well, yeah. We'd like to take a second from our interview with Randy to talk about our sponsor for this episode, the good folks over at Care Of. And right now you can go to their website, takecareof.com, enter code Hallmarkies, and get 25% off your first order from Care Of. And they're a really cool company that tries the best to make vitamins as personal an investment of your time and your benefit to your health as they possibly can. They offer a quiz and you can really determine what your vitamin needs are. And so, like, I was able to take it and specify that I needed energy and I needed help with sleep. And so I was able to get these melatonin packets, these dream packets, and I was able to get some help with that and some other vitamins. They come in these personalized little packets with your name and a little inspirational quote. And it's just a really great way to start off your day is some vitamins from Care Of. And if you go to their website, takecareof.com, you can get 25% off your first order. So definitely check that out. You'll really love them. I actually reordered because I've enjoyed it so much. So definitely check out Care Of. So last year, the My Christmas Inn and the Christmas Wonderland and Jingle Bell, those were all filmed in Utah, right?
Yes. We were out there for 2 months straight. This was the last time I went to Utah. They don't send me on location anymore. But I was on location for Christmas Inn and Jingle Bell for 2 months straight in Utah, which was great fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And those were both, I mean, Jingle Bell was a musical, which is really a lot of fun to do. We don't do very many of those. And usually they're for Lifetime. Hallmark doesn't usually do a whole lot of musicals. But we did that musical for Lifetime, and that was really great. And then Christmas Wonderland, I was not out there for. But interestingly enough, if you notice, Christmas Wonderland, I was getting ready to move on to another project. So I did the first cut, as we have talked about in the past. I did like my editor's cut. And then the director of that movie, who is Sean Olson, is also an editor in his own right. He started out as an editor. And so when I finished my editor's cut, I turned everything over to him. And he basically took it from there and was able to do his own, you know, producer's notes and network notes. I did some of his notes, but I had to move on to another project. So that was, I kind of filled in. So we shared the credit on that film because he did all the network notes and the producer's notes and what have you himself, because he's an accomplished editor in his own right.
The two parts that made me laugh, I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was really, I love Emily Osment. I think she's great. She's such a great fit for Hallmark. But I thought the, when she's baking that cookie, I'm like, has she never seen a cookie before? Like, what's going on? That cookie was so bizarre. That made me laugh. And then also the whole scene at the supposed quote unquote airport, that made me really laugh. Like, it looked like they took
the parking lot.
Yeah. It looked like a cubicle for like a school or something. Like, it did not, it was just funny to me. I was like, this is the least airporty airport scene I think I've ever seen in my life.
No, it's true.
It's funny. But it was sweet. Yeah. I really liked the snowball and the glitter day, the glitter fight that they had.
Oh, yes, yes.
That was cute.
Yeah, that was interesting, because they basically had one take to shoot that, because as soon as they did it, the wide shot, when they first started doing that, everybody was covered in glitter.
Sure.
Yeah. So it was like you had to get it that first time, and then you could do like other things from there, because getting rid of all that glitter takes forever.
Sure. That would be a nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was really cute. Yeah. Then My Christmas Inn, I actually liked a lot too, because I liked Rob Mays, I think was the guy. And Tia Mowry, I liked them, and I had never seen him in anything before, and I thought he was very dreamy and he was a lot of fun, but I liked the fact that he came to her and said, you know, I'll come to you.
Right.
There was never a question of drop everything in your life and you're evil for living in the city, you're a bad person of business, you know, kind of a thing. There was no demonizing of her character, which I appreciated. Right. And it was just of kind of, what does she want to do now with her life? And so I thought that was really good in that one.
Nice. Well, if you liked him in that one of the ones I have coming up is called The Road Home for Christmas. And he's the lead actor in that, with Marla Sokoloff is the lead actress. And it's also a musical, even more so than Jingle Bell was, because one of the other actresses in it is Marie Osmond, who does a whole musical number. It's really a special one, I think.
I was going to ask, is Marie Osmond like really in the movie? Because I was a little bit irritated in My Christmas Inn. 100%
really in it.
I was a little irritated in My Christmas Inn with like Jack Hay. That they were the movie for like 5 minutes.
Yeah. No, Marie is really in the movie, for reals.
Okay.
Way more than Jack A and Tim Reed were, for sure. I mean, she's not like, you know, in the whole movie, but she's got a very big part. She's certainly way more than Jack A. Because the premise of the movie is Marla and Rob play these two musicians who are like they do dueling pianos in New Orleans, and they are both trying to get home for Christmas, and I can't remember what reason it, but they decide they're going to like road trip home for Christmas, and they both live in like they find out they both live like within a few, you know, miles or whatever of each other in Ohio somewhere, so they got to travel from New Orleans to Ohio over Christmas. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a road movie, and along the way there's lots of music, and Marie Osmond plays a Nashville singer, so when they get to Nashville, mm-hmm. They run into Marie Osmond, and they all get up, and there's a huge musical number there, which is just so great. It was so much fun working on that, and then you know they eventually, you know, make it to Ohio and Christmas, and you know, and of course they fall in love. Because, you know, how can they not?
Right.
it's really good. It's really a special one. I really like this one a lot.
Well, we know she's a little bit country. Ray Osmond.
I know.
That sounds great.
I know.
That'll be fun.
It's I'm so upset again because I didn't get to meet her.
I was going to ask you.
Because they shot it all out in Utah, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I don't go on location anymore, so. But she's great. She actually was in Vegas at the time, even though, you know, her family's from Utah. She was doing she has like a Vegas act that she does. So she actually had to, you know, fly into Utah just like anybody else,
right?
Which I find funny. But so that's coming up. And then I have another one called Staging Christmas that's coming up, also written by Anna, wrote Staging Christmas.
Oh.
And that's with Soleil Moonfry. Who was Punky Brewster, and Julia White, who was Steve Urkel, right?
It's a TGIF reunion. It's very exciting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that one's a lot of fun. We're still actually we've locked it, but I'm actually doing color correction on it this week.
Wow.
And that's a new director for us. We have a woman director named Amy Barrett, and she's excellent. So she's a new person for us. So that's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Is it about like a home stager or?
Yes, exactly right. It's okay. Somebody who she stages like homes for, like when they're selling homes. And the guy who's played by George Stoltz, who's the romantic lead, he's like a recently widowed and he has a little daughter, and he wants, you know, he never has time to like, you know, make his house over for Christmas, and his daughter sort of misses it. So he hires Soleil to like stage his house for Christmas, even though they don't really ordinarily do that. So that's sort of the premise. But yeah, she's like a house stager, I guess is what they call them. But she stages like open houses for like homes that are going to be sold.
Mm-hmm. I think that Anna wrote Christmas Made to Order on Hallmark last year, which was also basically about a stager person like that, kind of that Jonathan Bennett hires to decorate his house for his parents coming into town. So I think
you're right. I didn't work on that one. I think that's the one Anna movie that I didn't work on because I almost do all the ones that Anna does. But
yeah,
you could be right. This one, Staging Christmas, airs November 29th. So that's like what day after Christmas. And Road Home is the one that airs. It airs October 26th.
Yeah, one of the first.
I know, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah.
I mean, hopefully people will be ready for Christmas movies in October. I think they kind of probably are.
I mean, I'm kind of annoyed with Hallmark because they are only doing two Fall Harvest movies, and I like Fall Harvest movies, but yeah, I mean, we're getting Christmas. It's like they're just skipping over fall.
Don't they have this thing with like a new movie every Saturday?
Yeah,
I remember you
failed
guys complaining about it. They skipped a week.
They failed at that quite a bit. I think they definitely overpromised more than they could deliver, and they've definitely not given us a movie every weekend.
Well, I remember Sister of the Bride got moved to a slot because there was another movie that was supposed to be in that slot, and then that movie got pushed. And then that movie that got pushed eventually ended up just on their streaming service.
Yeah, it was madness.
I don't know what the story there is. There's a story there somewhere.
Yeah, well, they announced four Fall Harvest movies, and then all of a sudden they put When Hope Calls on this weekend, and they canceled two of the movies. It's like, what? so bizarre. Anyway, it's
oh, really?
Crazy.
They're just not making them at all?
Well, I mean, they're made, as far as I know. I actually interviewed the writer for one and the star of one.
Oh.
And
they've canceled their airing.
Yeah, I guess.
Did they just move them to a different date, do you suspect?
You think
or do you think
they
they're
could.
Just...
I nothing know. Has been announced at this time, and all the scheduling and all the like publicity only shows two movies. And so,
well, as we know from being fans of Good Witch, their scheduling got so screwed up when they had to like stop When Calls the Heart, which I don't watch, but I'm sure it's wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, when that had to be like stopped and they had to like, I mean, I'm sure the scheduling department at Hallmark was pulling their hair out trying
that
to
was so frustrating.
Like, make it all work.
Yeah, that was so frustrating because they canceled Good Witch for like 3 weeks and they are supposedly not. So not only did they not give us movies in July, they only gave us one movie, which was on Hallmark Movies and Mysteries, not on the regular Hallmark channel. So they had only one Sister of the Bride. And then at the very end of the month, Roman Love. Those were the only two movies of July. And they canceled Good Witch. It's like, what? Like, you could have at least left us with that. Like, what?
There is a message to the madness somewhere. There's got to be reason. I mean, they do these things for a reason.
Yeah.
Just because we're not privy to the reasons doesn't mean, and we might not agree with the reasons, but there is a reason. They don't just randomly do these things.
Yeah.
But speaking
of
Hallmark movies and mysteries, we talk all about Good Witch, but what we haven't talked about is my other love, which is Aurora Tea Garden.
Oh yeah.
I love that Aurora Tea Garden.
I think that Aurora had a little bit of bad luck because each of the stories in this last month that they had basically been covered on a previous mystery just this year. Like you had a murder during a play, which had just been in Mystery 101. They had just done a murder at a play. They had a murder at a wedding, and they had just done that at Picture Perfect Murders, Mysteries show. And then I'm trying to remember, the Inheritance one, which they had just done similar to one with, I think it was with Chronicle Mysteries. So it was kind of like, I don't know, it was weird. And maybe it's just
It's because you watch everything. I don't watch all those other ones, so it never occurred to me that, you know, that these were similar plot lines.
Weeks before, in June, they had had, the end of June, had a Mystery 101 about play. And so it just was but I mean, I didn't hate it or anything. I think I would have liked it better. So maybe I just watched too many.
The only thing I didn't like about all, because they were all great, but that wig has to go.
That wig
has to go.
It was so bad. Like, why not just have her normal hair?
Because they've had her normal hair in the past. That character, if you watch all the movies, she has been brunette, she's been blonde, she's had long hair, she's had short hair. She's had every color and every style you can imagine. So who cares?
Like,
just give her whatever her natural...
On When Calls the Heart, because it's historical or attempting to be historical, that you have to have long hair because women just didn't have short hair in that era. That's understandable. There's no reason why Aurora Tea Garden can't have any color of hair that she wants. It looked so bad. That wig was awful. Totally.
It was really awful. And there were, in one of the movies, literally, like, it changed colors between scenes. It was the one where her friend went to the hospital because she got attacked. I can't remember which one that was. Every scene at the hospital, you could tell, like, the wig was a different color that day that they shot those hospitals. Because all of a sudden it went from being, like, really red to being more blondish. And I was like, what's going on here? And they must have the money for, like, a proper wig. It just looked really bad. And I'm not the only one. I was looking online and, like, everybody's talking about it. So
it was
hopefully
bad.
They have wised up, and next time they will either let her, you know, get a better wig or just let her have whatever natural hair color and hairstyle that she has.
I'm surprised that she's got enough clout. I would think that she could get a wig that she wants, like a good wig.
I heard the reason she had a wig is because she didn't want to dye her hair again. because apparently in the past they've just dyed her hair that red color or whatever, and she had a different hair color, and they, for whatever reason, they wanted her to be redhead. Although, again, I don't know why, because it's been different before, and women change their hair colors like people change a light bulb. It doesn't mean anything. So she didn't want to color her hair because her hair was getting damaged. Great, understood. So just keep whatever your natural color is.
Exactly.
Or get a better wig. I mean, that wig was so awful.
I agree.
Enough about that. I still like
it. When you watch just as a regular viewer, do you find yourself being like, oh, that was a weird cut there, that was a weird edit? Like, do you ever find yourself kind of looking at things that way?
Not usually. I mean, because rarely is there like an odd edit. I mean, the thing that I might notice more is when I feel like the pacing is off. And sometimes I can usually tell when things are like, we're running too long, so they cut things like maybe a little too short, or they leave things on a little longer than I think they should. So sometimes there's some odd things like that, but I always know there's a reason, you know, because I'm sure you could look at films I've cut, and then after the fact, I look at them, I go, oh, I wouldn't have necessarily done that, but at the time, I'm sure there was a reason. I try not to, I try to turn my editing cap off when I'm watching, just so I don't sit there and, you know, constantly be like, oh, I wonder why they made that choice. I wonder why they made that choice. Because then it just, you know, I just rather enjoy the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. All right. Well, we like to end our interviews with some fun questions. And last time I listened to it again, we did the Christmas questions with you. So we're going to do the regular questions this time.
Oh, good.
All right. What is the best ice cream flavor?
Chocolate chip.
Okay. What is your favorite color?
Black.
Okay. What music are you into right now?
The only music I ever listen to is like 70s soft rock.
Okay. Like Barry Manilow and stuff like that?
No, like John Denver, Billy Joel, things like that.
Good. Okay. What is your go-to date night food?
Seafood. I'm a big seafood fan. So. Yum.
Very good. What is your go-to date night activity?
Dinner and a movie. Always, maybe that's too boring, but that's sort of like a nice thing. And it's always like the movie first and dinner after. That's
smart. Like, you got it. That's the rule on the podcast.
Yeah. Oh, is it? Yes. No, that's the thing.
Because then you have something to talk about at dinner.
Right.
You can talk about
and you end the evening talking. If you have the dinner and everything's going great, that's fine. And then you spend the next 2 hours not talking, and then it's over. Or you just see the movie first, and then you have the rest of the time to chat.
You've got it down. Okay. Dogs or cats?
Dogs, for sure.
Okay. Beaches or mountains?
Mountains, 100%.
Okay. Suit and tie or sweats?
Of those choices, I would say sweats. One of the best things about my job is I wear like jeans and t-shirts every day. That's like my go-to thing. I don't have to dress up for my job, and that's one of the best things about it.
Yeah. Okay. What is your favorite holiday to celebrate?
Halloween is a lot of fun. Yeah. Halloween's a lot of fun. Because even as an adult, you can dress up and go to a party and like dress up in a crazy costume and have a lot of fun.
What's your best costume?
I used to go with Zorro, which is fairly easy to do, but I had a really good Zorro costume.
Uh-huh.
And then for a couple of years, I went as Michael Myers because I had a really nice mask.
Uh-huh.
But then you go to a party as Michael Myers and it creeps people out and no one wants to talk to you.
Yeah. Right.
Because just that mask is creepy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter that they know it's like you underneath there. Like, they don't want to talk to you. So I realized that was like the bad choice if I wanted to actually socialize at a party because no one wanted to be near me.
Maybe a good choice if you don't want to, if you just want to like.
That's true.
You're really just you're just going to go. It might be a good choice. I'm very excited this year because I love Halloween as well. But I think I almost enjoy the the thought process between developing a costume, maybe even more than the night itself. But this year I'm going as Where's Waldo.
Oh, nice.
I'm really excited about. Yeah, it's going to be very fun. I guess, I don't know, spoiler alert, whenever we do our if we ever do a Halloween episode. But, so, last question. What is your favorite Hallmark movie? And you can say one of your own.
Well, it might have to be sort of one of my own, because I don't know that I watch a whole lot that's not mine. Mm-hmm. Let me think. I really liked Christmasland was a good one, I thought. But also there's one that's escaping my memory right now that I really enjoyed.
Switched for Christmas.
Only because I had so much fun working on that, trying to do all those twinning effects where, you know, Candace Cameron was playing her own twin. So that was like, I really had a great time working on that film, and I think it turned out really well as well.
Mm-hmm.
So sorry, I couldn't remember the name of it for the life of a minute.
It's okay. That sounds good. I think that my favorite of yours, probably maybe the 12 Gifts of Christmas. I like that one.
Mm, that was my very first one.
Oh, was it?
My very first Hallmark with Katrina Law and Erin O'Connell.
I like that one pretty good.
It's a fun one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really good one. So, well, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. This was so much fun. I really had a great time talking with you. And so how can people follow you on social media or anything like that?
I mean, I have a Facebook page, but I don't really I don't really use it that often or whatever. It's not like, I'm not like out there trying to put my name out there for social media. So, I mean, find Randy Carter on Facebook. I mean, there's probably a million Randy Carters on Facebook, but that's me.
Maybe you see him commenting on the Good Witch boards.
There you go.
Respond because he's awesome. Well, thanks again. I really appreciate it. And we'll be very curious to see your upcoming films, and we'll have to have you back on again, hopefully sooner than a whole year.
anytime. Okay. I'd love to come on.
Great. Well, thanks so much. And you can follow me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, iTunes, YouTube, and then you make sure you're following the podcast at Hallmarkies Pod, all of our social media and on iTunes and YouTube. And thanks again, Randy. We really appreciate it. And we will talk again soon.